Word of mouth.
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 Mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. It's been just over 2 years since the Mars rover Curiosity touched down on the red planet. Its improbable descent into the Martian atmosphere, nicknamed the 7 Minutes of Terror, helped make the mission and its star a household name. Now, 2 years later, science writer Mark Kaufman examines the Mars rover program with unprecedented detail in his new book, Mars Up Close, Inside the Curiosity Mission. Hello, Mark.
Pleased to be here with you.
Well, really glad to have you. Let's remember for a moment that hair-raising day for NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab. It's August the 6th, 2012, when Curiosity landed on Mars. What was at stake, and why was it so nerve-wracking?
Well, it was so nerve-wracking because the capsule was coming in at something like 13,000 miles an hour as it hit the tip of the atmosphere, and it had 7 minutes to go down to 0 miles an hour, and it was going to be making that break in an entirely new way. It's something called a sky crane, never before tried. Also, this was a much bigger payload than they had ever delivered before. This was a ton compared to something like 375 pounds from the earlier rover. So this was, you know, a major engineering feat and challenge.
Well, it was a real nail-biter. And the fact that we all shared in that and shared in the joy that it landed safely is part of what Curiosity got right. I mean, I get the sense that more so than many of NASA's other endeavors, it was very well equipped and branded for the social media age. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And that was very consciously done. A part of the NASA mission is to educate and to explain to the public what they're doing, both legislatively and also because this is how they get enthusiasm going and get their message across to people. So, yes, that was definitely a conscious thing, and I think that they succeeded wildly.
You have a photograph in the book of Curiosity's first selfie, in fact, and of course there was a Twitter account. And what we get in this book is a kind of sense of those people who are working behind the scenes in all sorts of different capacities. Some of them we know a little about. In fact, you write that the Curiosity team, they planned initially to drive the rover toward Mount Sharp. After landing, though, decided to go in the opposite direction. So bring us through how a decision like that is made. How do they get to that?
Okay. Just a little bit of background. Mount Sharp is 3 miles high and almost 20 miles across. It is enormous, and it has at its lower reaches the kinds of layers of rock and of mineral that geologists just crave. It allows them to read the geological history and to some extent the climatic history of the planet. But in terms of the decision, it was really a fascinating thing. I was out there at JPL and to talk to some of the scientists and engineers as this was happening kind of in real time.
And JPL being Jet Propulsion Labs.
Yes, I'm sorry. NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab out in Pasadena. And they had clear plans that they were going to go to Mount Sharp. That was the mission destination. But they also were officially, NASA bureaucracy, they were a mission of discovery. And they had earlier determined that maybe a half a mile from where they were landing was a spot that was probably the lowest spot in Gale Crater. And it was also where three rock types all met. And that's an unusual kind of concentration and frequently is a very revelatory one. So they, at one point, took a vote. They turned around, started going the opposite direction of where they were planning, and the results were utterly spectacular.
Well, Mark, the big challenge for NASA is to keep people interested, you know, after the landing's made, after those initial pictures come back. How do you maintain excitement about seemingly similar Martian geology when people have already sort of moved on to the excitement over humans landing on Mars?
What happened? happened soon after landing was they made this decision to go in a different direction, and at a place called Yellowknife Bay, they really just hit pay dirt. They found what was, when you look at the pictures, in effect, the bottom of a lake. You know, it looks like mud flats. They'd never seen anything like this before on Mars. And they had a drill, and so they drilled in, and they found chemicals and the residue of water that together with some other factors allowed them to conclude that had there been life on Mars, and we don't know if there ever was, but had there been, it could survive in the conditions that were present there. So that was, in fact, one of their main goals, was to determine that, and they determined it in the first half a year or so. Then they started this traverse back to Mount Sharp, and it has been kind of a slow time, and there have been some serious difficulties, but I think that when they reach Mount Sharp, which should be in a couple months, you're going to find, you're going to be seeing things that have never, ever been seen before on Mars. And this is all part of the story they're trying to put together, that once upon a time, long ago, around the same time that life emerged on Earth, that Mars had conditions that were kind of shockingly similar. And I would have to say, you know, as a science writer, and I think a lot of people in the field would agree, that if they do find remnants of life or signs that there once was life on Mars way back when, probably the biggest science discovery of all time. It would be one of those moments like when Copernicus said, hey, the Earth isn't the center of the solar system, the sun is. This would be saying, hey, Earth is not the only place where there's life. And if that is true, if there's also on Mars as well as Earth, then you could make the leap to say that most likely life is common throughout the universe. Mm.
Mark, you wrote recently in the New York Times about a comet that is due to pass by Mars at very close distance, and this is relatively speaking something like 82,000 miles. Is that any kind of threat to Curiosity?
It was initially seen as a major threat going directly at the planet, and if it had hit the planet, the rovers as well as the orbiting satellites all would have had an extremely bad day and probably would have been destroyed. Mm. They now believe it's going to come, as you said, somewhat pretty close. It's about one-third of the way to the moon, from Earth to the moon. And instead of being a huge threat, it is an enormous science opportunity where they will see a very unique kind of comet, primordial, coming from way out in the Oort cloud, and they will be able to look at it very closely. So it's an enormous opportunity for them scientifically.
Well, another opportunity coming up this month, the European Space Agency's Rosetta spacecraft successfully caught up with a comet, and the ESA has announced plans to put a lander on that comet in November. Is there any threat of that kind of mission taking away excitement from Curiosity, or does it just add to the whole sense of public excitement that follows these kind of projects in space?
I believe the latter. The Rosetta mission is remarkable. It's been flying for 10 years, and now it's at the comet, and hopefully we'll be able to send some kind of landing into the nucleus of the comet. My sense is that what these missions, what they tell us is that we really are becoming a spacefaring civilization. We're learning about what's out there in with many, many different pieces of equipment, and especially on Mars. You know, here we have a comet that's coming really close to Mars, could damage equipment, and that matters to us now here on Earth. Mars is, in that sense, a little bit of an extension of Earth, and that's brand new. That makes us, I think, the beginnings of a real spacefaring civilization.
Well, Mark Kaufman, thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Mark Kaufman, a science writer and author whose newest book is Mars Up Close, Inside the Curiosity Mission. You'll find more on the book and on Curiosity at wordofmouthradio.org.